Well, here we are at Mount Madonna Center, the last evening of our 2015 Gathering of Initiates, and we're about to have our Memories of Master session, which everybody seems to enjoy. Who would like to tell a memory of Master that we all would enjoy hearing?
On Master's tour in 1972, my husband and I, Larry, by the way, he says hello to everyone. On his tour, we had a wonderful time in Northern California with Master, and then we drove down to LA to stay with my mother while we went to see Master every day when he was down in Anaheim. And my mother thought we were coming to see her. And I told her, I said, Mom, we're going to see Master. I'm sorry, we're just here to stay with you. And she said, well, can I go too? And I said, sure, Master invites everybody. So she went, she sat through all of Master's talks, and she decided that she was going to fill out the papers. So she filled out the initiation papers, and she said, this is just good for me. And I said, well, Mom, did you read everything? So she picked it up, and she started to read it a little closer. And she said, I don't think, I like my drink, I like my smoke, I like my meat, and I love my fish. And I can't live without eggs. And I said, well, that's not good. So she said, well, I can't go through with this. Should I just tear them up and throw them away? And I said, oh, no, you have to give them back to Master. So she said, I'm not going up there by myself. You have to come with me. And I said, okay, I'll go with you. I was looking for any opportunity to get close. So we walked up there, we got through the line, it took some time, but she handed Master the papers. Like, she said, I'm sorry, sir, but I can't keep any of the diet things. I can't keep the diary. That would be too much for me, and I don't want to be a hypocrite. And Master took both her hands like this, and the papers were in it too. And he looked over to me like this, he grinned. He looked back at her and he said, that's all right, you're under my care anyway. And she said, oh, thank you, sir. When my mother gave Master the papers, I forgot to say it. He took the papers from her hands, and he went like this, and he sat on them. It was so cute. Who's next?
Oh, gee.
Pass it around.
Most people here read my stories.
That's all right. They're good. They're fresh.
I know. I remember one time in India, we were sitting in a little group with Master over in India, and I remember that one of the gals, like her, kind of behind me, said, said, oh, Master, we are so fortunate to have you. And he answered, I'm the fortunate one. I have all of you. If that's worth telling. I don't know, what else can I say? Except I remember I was telling one of the people here tonight, Master was sick. He had stomach problems. Anybody remember that in the readings?
Must have been one of us.
Yeah. And he had a doctor. I can't think of the doctor's name. He asked Master, why don't you take something to, cure yourself? He didn't say you have all this power, but, that's the inference. And Master said no, and so another day goes by and the doctor comes in. He says, Master, I have a friend that has a very similar problem to what you have. He has this stomach problem. Could you give me some sort of a remedy for him? You know, they're into homeopathy and everything. And Master says, yes, yes, you know, give him, have him take a half a lemon and a glass of water in the morning. And he said, thank you, Master. And the next day he comes in, he's bringing Master a cup of lemonade, hot lemonade with water in it. And Master says, you know, he said, well, I thought you said it was for your best friend. Yes, it is. That's a cute, kind of a cute story. And shall I tell the dirty story about myself?
No.
I mean, the stupid thing I did.
We're all stupid. It's fine.
I took some papers over from California for a friend, gave them to Master. And I was only over there 3 weeks. I was 3 weeks before he departed. And by the way, he told quite a few times, he gave warnings of when he was leaving. Three times that I know of, and nobody would listen, but he gave these hints, very strong hints. And he left exactly on the day that all of the predictions that he made were there. Anyway, I had taken some papers there, and he put them in his little office. And he called me over, and this was after he'd been there a while. And he said, see if you can find those papers. Guess what I said? I thought God never lost anything. Can you believe that stupid comment? And he said, I couldn't understand him, of course. Maybe he didn't want me to.
He was speaking to you.
Huh? Yeah, that was funny. Well, that's all I have to say.
The last two nights, there were movies shown on Manavkendra, and it showed the construction of Manavkendra, the dedication of Manavkendra, and the one yesterday was so beautiful with so many beautiful pictures of Master as he was talking about the Manavkendra. And that's what I experienced. Well, every time I was in Master's presence, he was talking about Manavkendra and how important it was to him, to us, to build something like that. He spoke to the Congress about it. He spoke to the Prime Minister about Manavkendra. And the building of Manavkendra was so exciting to see this happening. And now we hear that Manavkendra is not operational. Trying to piece this together, talking to Johannes today, is it possible that Master passed on the desire and the skill and the ability to build something like he built very cheaply? All you need is a God man and lots of people and lots of help, and it's functional and workable, and he showed that it was. So talking to Johannes today, he said that there was a billionaire, and this could just be one of many people, who has fixed up. Could you tell us again, Johannes, what this man has done? One person, one millionaire.
A disciple.
Yeah, it was one of Master's initiates, and I think he's in contact with Rouhani Satsang USA. His name is Hayani, and he has dedicated so many places of charity, I would say, a home for the elderly and clinics and eye clinics and places like this, I think 35 or 40 all over India, wherever he found out there is a need. And besides that, he would have been ready to throw a lot of money into getting Manav Kendra back in shape, run the house for the elderly properly and the school and everything. But the caretaker there, he found that the whole Manav Kendra is his own, and he started selling parts of the property. And so he wouldn't agree that the money was only used for the Manav Kendra, rebuilding of the Manav Kendra. So finally this rich initiate who told me personally his life story, and when he came to the point that he felt he should share his wealth with all others who don't have money, who don't have a basis to live on, and so on. And he finally said, okay, I'm sorry, I tried my best, but under these conditions, it's impossible to put any money into the project. And so he withdrew. That's probably what you meant.
And the tape before, and the movie before, I don't know how many times Master said, share with others, while the building of Manav Kendra was going on. So, thank you, Johannes. So I want to share with you my Manav Kendra. I was there, and this will always be it. Can't destroy Manav Kendra. I was there in 1971, and it was July, but about 21st, that about five of us were given the choice either to stay at Sawan Ashram or go to Manav Kendra with Master. Master was going there to oversee Taiji's operation, cataract operation, in the Manav Kendra Hospital. So we were there for 4 days, and for the first 2 days, Master was sitting at Taiji's feet, taking care of Taiji after the operation. But as we went by the window, everything was open. Master was sitting cross-legged at the foot of the bed without his turban, and but occasionally he would come out. And one late afternoon, he had about 100 of the his disciples who had been building Manav Kendra assembled for a satsang. Master comes out, and the platform was set up, raised about so high. Master comes out, walks around the front of the platform, and says, here. And that's where he wanted the chair taken down from the platform at everybody's level. And then he was handed the microphone, and it didn't work. So he said, come closer, and he says, I talk quietly. And then he said, I whisper, people in love need only whisper. And we had a continuation of distribution of prasad. So there was Sheila, my roommate, had diarrhea for a few days, and we saw Master distributing the prasad and skipping Sheila. And Sheila felt, oh, you could just see she was just so disappointed. And Master, but Master, it's prasad. And he said, it's still sugar. You had diarrhea. If you eat, and he did give her some. He said, if you eat it, in 2 weeks you will have diarrhea again. Yeah. So that's one ritual broken down. The other ritual we saw, this is all like in a half an hour. there was a young man who was carefully folding a scarf that he ceremoniously placed on the Guru Granth Sahib, that was right in front of Master. So what Master does is tug at this cover. This has nothing to do with it, he said, and took the cover away. Second ritual broken down. Okay, so we're sitting there, and this is before his talk. He does talk about on the Guru Granth Sahib. He sees the shoes piled by. Of course, this is all open. You know, there is no cover, there is no tent, it's his temple is open. And he has no temples, no churches, and shoes are ceremoniously lined up, except for ours. The Westerners were kind of screwed up, you know, not placed evenly. And there was a young man who was attempting to straighten out the shoes, and you could see Master, just all he did was just point. He said, this is not a temple. Everything was just so beautiful at Manav Kendra. The little houses for the, that was in the dedication, just one room. Well, they were like little apartment, but well set up. There was fields of grain and cows out there. There was a library, the hospital, a simple house for Master. So he set a program that could be duplicated, and he was asked, so we do the same thing in America. There was a movement, you know, we want to do the same thing, and there was a piece of property that was picked out, and Master said, no, you have means to take care of the poor. You have our social security, there are churches, there are people who will take care of each other there. And you don't need that there. So hopefully this start will continue of people where it's needed. There will be the influence of Master and the work that he did for Manav Kendra.
This is a question for Charlene. Steve Millick said, and I'm wondering whether you had heard this, that at some time Master said that the spring at Manav Kendra that had for the pool, the time would come when it would be the only water for 100 miles around.
Sure, if Johannes wants to answer this or not, but the water was, it's not being maintained, unfortunately. And there too, could that be easily fixed? Probably, if it was needed. It is a big well, it is a big pump, so it would just need to be maintained.
I mean, the Mansarovar is dirty. It's not maintained. The well is still working. Yes. And actually, I took a sample of the water into my laboratory and had it analyzed. And although we had carried it around with us at 110 degrees temperature for 2 weeks, and then, so it wasn't sterile at all. It was perfect for drinking.
I have to read this because the details are such, and I hope I have time that I it will take about 10-12 minutes. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. This has to do with my gambling. I had a major addiction to gambling. I would do anything. In the fall of 1954, I was assigned to the naval station on Terminal Island. With the 140-mile distance between Tijuana and Long Beach, in other words, I had gambled a great deal on Hi-Li in Tijuana. 76 times I kept count. And then I found that I could do much better even at Las Vegas at the gaming table. In early September, my spiritual mentor, Kirpal Singh, and the reason I called him spiritual mentor, because I was reading this same talk to my college, to a college writing class. And so Kirpal Singh made himself known to me. Accumulated baggage became transparent before his inner vision. He understood my passion for gambling and knew God would find a way to direct my attention elsewhere. This is what Kirpal Singh said. There is nothing impossible in this world. The word impossible is found in the dictionary of fools. For me, the words of Kirpal Singh held two meanings. One directed my path to roulette, spending most weekends at the Golden Nugget to defray expenses. $5 times five swabbies that I took with me to Vegas, I could make $25 and it would keep my Fraser afloat. One Sunday afternoon under a hot Vegas sun, the lounge, and after lounging about the sand swimming pool, I discovered a small gift shop where a miniature roulette wheel was on display. It was strikingly similar to the full size many had played on and lost. $40 had been dedicated to the roulette wheel, were switched to a down payment on the ship's carbon. You ask what I would do with the miniature roulette wheel at the Long Beach Naval Base. Kirpal Singh's words were, "There is nothing impossible in this world." I would accomplish an impossible dream told to me by the Golden Nugget dealer. In 20 years working the wheel, red has never come up 21 times in a row. Thus began Kirpal's impossible promise. Cramped in two bowling alleys, I set pins for five long nights. $5 from five sailors completed the sum needed. And we were off to collect my prize. From the moment I possessed the miniature roulette wheel, every conceivable strategy was applied. There would be no more Vegas trips until the perfect system was found. Kirpal Singh advised 2 hours of spiritual meditation daily. I spent in excess of 6 hours daily sending one little metal ball on endless rounds. My spiritual quest had become a prayer to the wheel. A painful result followed. One system worked. Again, I was reminded of Kirpal Singh's words. There is nothing impossible in this world. His words absorbed my all thoughts. I spun the wheel, the ball, deep into the night while nursing a splitting headache. My day job, assigned by the Navy, consists of typing honorable discharges for the rank and file and undesirable discharges for discovered homosexuals. With fingers numb from countless spins, I pledged my car to pay another to complete daily assignments. With unbearable pain running up and down my 6'4" frame, I collapsed, only to try again. Finally, on the last of the 5th of November, the impossible happened. Red, 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 21 times in a row. My ship had arrived. A headache throbbed to the tune of money. With Las Vegas in tow, I collapsed in a dream of endless roulette numbers floating around me. No riders this time, just me aboard the fantastic Fraser. With Kirpal Singh as my betting partner, I took only the wheel and the greatest of expectations. I did the math. A $1 bet left on red 21 times would return $2,071,552. At the Golden Nugget, renewing the excitement of a sailor on First Liberty, $1 was placed on red. 1, 2, 3, 4 times red appeared, doubling with each spin. All at once, my world turned black. The house claimed my $16. My world had gone haywire. Returning to my car, I again played my private wheel. But look, red and only red appeared. A cerebral ball flashed brighter than neon lights blanketing the strip. As the original silver dollar multiplied on the table, my attention had slipped from the speeding ball to the comforting feel of money. Again, I returned to the nugget's wheel, leaving my wallet in the car. The ball had come to rest in the black pocket. During the next play, I would place heart and soul on red. Kirpal Singh proved the impossible. 21 times and 21 times again, only red showed. The house stopped the play. Something was mechanically wrong, they said. As the dream drained of all emotion, I stumbled to the bar and ordered a glass of orange juice. A stocky man with bright, ruddy complexion walked up to me. I watched you. Your eyes never left that wheel. Your mind done it. Held that damn wheel on red. Only red. You noticed what others racked up. Trembling, I turned to the man with bloodshot eyes. Once my money's down, I lose concentration on the wheel. His eyes brightened. Listen here, I got a plan. I'm your stick, see? My money goes down, we split the take. We take the strip one casino at a time. Well, friend, I appreciate your faith in me, but first I must discover how and why this is happening. Thinking of Kirpal Singh's words, nothing is impossible, I rushed a letter to my spiritual mentor, asking him for complete focus on the wheel, while quietly waiting red to multiply my original silver dollar. I promised dear Kirpal I'd give half or more of my winnings to charity. His answer came faster than the spinning roulette ball. His words, gambling has been universally accepted to be bad. So a bad thing is bad always, no matter how good purpose may be served. To the initiates on the path who have not yet progressed well within and who are prone to be affected by others' unwholesome influence, this is a bad habit which should be immediately shunned. It produces anxiety, nervousness, and lower impulses of greed and hatred, which are vibrated at such meetings, disturbing one's peace of mind and are harmful to meditation. My passion for gambling completely came to an end. Master had really won the day. The gambling happened to me before I was initiated, not after. And why Master did it that way, I'll never know. But I was a hard nut to crack, really. I didn't want to give up meat, especially I didn't want to give up shrimp. Shrimp was my favorite dish. And so I even wrote to Master and said, could I give up everything else except shrimp? He didn't go along with that. There were so many things that Master did. I lost control of the car one time. I went to sleep in the car. And Master just took over and drove the car. Things that just would boggle my mind. He was always there, the little things, the big things. I thought, I better follow this guy because, he's going to take good care of me and this foolish things that I was doing, like gambling. And once this happened to me in gambling, I did try it one more time, though. I tried it one more time, but about 15 years ago, when Helen and I were out on a cruise, and I thought, there's gambling here, and I said, I wonder if it would still work. So I said, well, I'll be careful with money. I will just bet $3 each play and take back the winnings each time, so the money doesn't enter into it. And so I had one of my good friends was at one side of the table, and I said, would you do the rubbing of the wheel for me? Because that's one thing I had to do every time I do this, put this hand around the wheel, the roulette wheel. And so he said, yeah. So I put my money and I said, I won't even take red this time. I'm going to go red, black, red, black. And I said, I have a good thing to concentrate on, because the Eurasian coupler that was handling it had beautiful red lips. So I thought, and she was dressed in black. So I would concentrate on her red lips, put my bet down, and I won. I won 15 times in a row, red, black, red, black. And I said, okay, that's it. I won't ever do it again. I just know that it's still possible to do it.
Okay. Your name is Karen? You? Yeah?
Yes.
Well, when you were talking about your mother, I had a similar experience in 1972 on the tour. I also went to Los Angeles and stayed at my mother's. And and she was interested in seeing Master also. Sorry, I'm a little breathless. So we went together and sat right up in front of him. And he looked at, I mean, I had been sitting in the front and he, you know, I was familiar. I mean, as much as with a big crowd. Anyway, he looked at us and I could see he registered that, you know, we were related. Anyway, so she decided to accept the initiation. She didn't read it. She didn't read it over very clearly either. But anyway, she went ahead with it, and she had a good experience. And then she left the path. I mean, she was interested in a lot of things, but she never really stayed very much in adherence. Anyway, years later, when she was ill and dying, she was in the hospital, and I was there lying on a cot, just resting, because I had been visiting her, you know, pretty much every day, I mean, all day. And she was talking to a friend of hers who happened to be a psychiatrist. He had come to visit her, and she said to him, I was listening to them talking, and she said, Master Kirpal Singh has come and has smiled at me and said everything would be okay. So it was very, very sweet for me.
The truth is, I only saw the Master once. I mean, I saw him many times in the public all through the L.A. tour, but we had two kids, and my wife wasn't on the path, and we didn't, it actually never even occurred to me to go to India or to do the full tour with him. But I was thinking this afternoon, there was another piece in that puzzle, and I guess for all of us it's sort of a puzzle, our relationship with the Master. I was at one of the big meetings, and there was an initiation, and I stayed and wanted to get his initiation and hear it from him. But I was discovered in the back of the room and told to leave, you know, you're already initiated. I said, please let me stay. And no. And it affected me. It was something I wanted, and it was not going to happen. And I often wondered, was that kind of a turning point? I pretty much left the path for a lot of years, never gave up the diet, and philosophically I was always on the path, but my meditations got down to 15 minutes or something. anyway, that was one of those unfortunate or whatever turning points. But the How I Met My Master is the story I love to tell. But there's another one that I think I've told once or twice. It was in the Anaheim setup, and boy, I'm not remembering her name right now, but the wonderful gal from Glendale, somebody in here will remember her name. She went to India a lot, and
Lucille Gunn.
Lucille Gunn, yes, thank you. I knew she was wonderful. And she grabs me and pushes me into the room alone with Master, the only time I was ever alone with him. And I was just a blithering fool, and he said, yes, and his stern, yes. I said, and then he said, that's all right. That's all right. And out the door I went. That was my big moment.
Well, I just thought I'd tell a story that I've been telling to friends here. And so I seem to be remembering this one, so I'll tell it now. And it has to do with the 72 tour and what was really, for me, probably the peak experience, which was my trip to San Francisco and the satsang Master gave at the Unitarian Church on Geary and Goth. Anyway, I was traveling very poor, like most of the people my age, and luckily my friend Bridget found there was a ride we could get to San Francisco from Vancouver. And shortly before, I think the way it worked, we had gone and they had dedicated the new ashram in Vancouver. And Master, after the dedication, threw everybody an orange for prasad. And I happily caught one and, you know, was excited and wondering when I was going to eat it because, you know, I was waiting for the prime moment. So we get in this VW van and we're the last people to leave Vancouver and headed down the coast. Well, we didn't get too far before we hit U.S. Customs, and they're looking around the van and said, fresh fruit? I don't think so. Give that to us. I started pleading, well, can't I eat it right now? And the guy just took it away, and that was the end of my prasad, and I just felt like cheated. But it reminds me later that I learned that it's always good to eat the prasad when you get it, because you never know. But I learned this the hard way. Anyway, we were planning to drive. I think we drove all night to get from Vancouver to San Francisco. And in this VW bus, it took a long time. It had a top speed of 50, sometimes 55 miles an hour. And as we're approaching, driving into California, probably coming down Route 5, all of a sudden the driver finally was burned out and he told me, here, you drive. I said, oh, okay. And so I took over the driving, and as we're approaching San Francisco, all of a sudden the speedometer started climbing. And I was going, hey, we're going 65. I didn't think we could do this. It was pretty exciting because all of a sudden the van became supercharged and we got to the Bay Bridge and made it across to San Francisco. And I turned over the vehicle to this fellow who knew where he was going and I felt was much better qualified to drive the stick shift in San Francisco. And we got lucky on a parking place, and finally it looks like we're going to make satsang on time. And we're walking in, probably not too far before Master came in. And this stop was different than any I had experienced on the tour previously. It was like we came to the Kumbh Mela. Every spiritual group in San Francisco had people there, and most of them had costumes and were burning incense, and it was quite a scene. And it was like all these groups wanted to be there and be strong, and they were all excited very ecumenically in Kirpal Singh coming to their city. And I had heard from my friend Bridget that Kirpal said San Francisco was going to be a very special stop. And, you know, we're all kind of wondering what that meant. And Master gave the talk, and then he said, okay, now we're going to meditate for a few minutes. And he gave some simple instruction, and everyone sat for meditation. And for myself, it was my big meditation moment of the tour, and probably, and for several other people I met, it was like everybody was like knocked out by this session. I'd never seen anything like it. Fellow next to me had initiation, I think, for a couple years and said he was no longer practicing. He was a Zen Buddhist. So I turned around to him and said, well, how did you like that one? And he goes, don't talk to me, I'm still processing this. couldn't figure out what he was going to do. And my friend Mitch Sink said, I talked to him about this years later. He said that it just totally changed my relation to the path. He said, I don't think I talked to anybody for 2 weeks. And it was, you know, just this almost climatic moment for me on the tour. And it's just, you know, I now live essentially in San Francisco. I'm there a lot. And near that, every time I go by that church, it's just a great memory.
I've been debating whether to tell a story that didn't happen to me, John Tracy's story, which people have heard over and over. Should I tell it?
Yeah.
All right. it may be flawed, forgive me, and people fill in, please, if I say anything incorrectly. But John Tracy lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. He was also, he knew Charlie Fulcher. Several of us knew Charlie. And John was young. He was probably 15, 16, and he wanted initiation, and he'd been accepted. And this is the summer of 1974. And he had to go to Washington, D.C. to be initiated by Khanna, and receive the instructions from Mr. Khanna. So I'm hazy on some of the details, but John was at his house, and here comes Charlie Fulcher in his yellow Volkswagen station wagon. And John, when he tells it, he makes a big deal over the fact that he backed over some flowers that were planted by the driveway. And you wonder, why is he going to all this detail? But anyway, it will become evident later. So he and Charlie drove to Washington, D.C. from Charlotte, which takes the better part of a day. He said they didn't talk much. And he got to Khanna's house, went in, got initiated, received the instructions, got back in the car with Charlie and drove back, maybe even the next day. I'm not sure of the details. So why does he tell the story? I mean, you know, there's nothing remarkable about it. And so he got back into his house and everything was cool. And then he saw Charlie later, maybe a couple of months later even, and said, you know, You know, that time you just took me to Washington for got initiated by Kana. Charlie said, what are you talking about? I was in India in the summer of 74.
Wasn't Jim Alexander part of the picture?
I don't remember Jim.
I remember John telling that story in Junaluska.
Yeah.
With Charlie Bulger there.
Yeah, he just sat and smiled. But
he didn't remember anything.
Yeah, right. It wasn't Charlie.
It was Master.
Wow. So he got there by hook or by crook.
Wasn't it that he didn't even figure it out till years later.
Having
Thanksgiving with Jim Alexander,
possibly.
And he was telling about it, and Jim said, that's impossible.
Okay.
I was with Charlie in India at that time. And so John Tracy went back and got out his initiation papers to check the date. And to find out, was he really initiated or did he dream all that? And he had the paper. But beyond that, we don't know exactly how it happened.
Right. Like I said, there'd be details missing.
What about the flowers? They got burned.
Yeah, why did he talk about the flowers?
No, you brought them. I mean, did the flowers
over the flowers?
Yes, because I guess he came back to the house and saw the flowers had been run over. So there really was a physical car.
Charlie knew that he opened and he ran over them. And so it was his mother's flowers, you know. John's just a boy living at home still. And so Charlie got out and replanted, because some of them got pulled out, replanted and dusted the dirt off his hands while John was coming out.
Okay.
And got in the car and drove off.
And John said that Charlie, all he did was to get his hands clean was like this.
And they
were clean. And they stopped for pizza. They stopped for pizza on the way at Charlie's favorite place. And Charlie ate his pizza the way he always did. He folded it in half lengthwise and ate it like that. I mean, Charlie wasn't even there. And then, as I remember it,
Mr. Khanna wouldn't do the initiation. And so he said, no, you have to go to, wasn't it, that's when Jim Alexander somehow appeared and drove John to, was it Helen McDaniel's house?
Yes.
For initiation.
Yes.
And then they came back to Mr. Khanna's house and Charlie drove him back. And on the way, John said he was in an intellectual period at that time, and he referred to some page in some book, and he asked this question, and I forget what the question was, but Charlie's answer was, I'm only interested in the subtlest of the subtle. Is that right? And John thought, well, that's an interesting answer for Charlie to give. And then they went on a little while longer, Charlie driving along in his little Volkswagen. And then John said, he just initiated, you know, he said, what do you do when you're driving? What do you like to do? Do you say Simran? Do you listen to the sound current? And Charlie said, I listen to the sound current. Is that how you remember it? And then they get home, and it was years later. They had, was it in the 90s or in the after the 2000 mark even?
Yeah, exactly.
They were meeting together for the anniversary of Master's visit to Charlotte in one of their houses, and this came up. That someone said, well, let's go around and each person say how he was initiated. And that's how this came out. It's just an amazing story.
There's one more piece. John Tracy was one of the youngest of the Charlie Fulcher group. And he'd hang out with people like Jim Alexander and whomever else. And they all had these great stories of hanging around with Master, and John Tracy had nothing. And when they had this 25th anniversary, when the thing came out, all of a sudden he pulls this ace out of the deck. Kind of made his life a little better.
This goes back to parents and gambling. So I thought I'd tell what happened. And to this day, when I think about it, I mean, it happened so long ago, 19, after Master left the body, maybe 1974, 75. My parents weren't, this is not surprising, my parents weren't overjoyed when I got initiated by a guru from India and became a vegetarian. But they loved me very much. And my wife and myself, we moved to New Hampshire and we bought a home. They weren't very excited about that either. But my father loved us very much, and he gave a gift, a house gift, which was very generous. So we discussed this. Well, we shouldn't accept it. But Master says you could accept gifts from parents. And how could I tell my father, I'm sorry, I'm not accepting it. It's too much. I can't do that. So he accepted. And Master always said that there's give and take between parents and children. They were living in New York. We were living in New Hampshire. And we would meet in Boston. So we meet my parents in Boston, and my mother, first thing my mother says, you know, your father met your guru, which shocked me. Well, this would happen. My father liked to gamble, and he would gamble in Atlantic City, very disciplined. He had this system, but he would maybe do on the roulette wheel. He would maybe do four or five shots. He would put his chips on a number on a roulette wheel. And if he won, he'd walk away, a winner. Then if he lost, he'd walk away. And, you know, not so he's very disciplined. So at this time in Atlantic City, he placed his bet, his final bet, and he lost. So he was walking away, and he said, someone tapped him on the shoulder. And he turned, and there's this gentleman with a turban. And he was the gentleman with the turban was pointing to the roulette wheel. And my dad looks around, walks there, and he won a whole pile of chips. Well, if there was any doubt that it was Master, see, my mom didn't approve of all the gambling, so she stayed in the room. So when my dad went to the room in Atlantic City, my mom saw him, and the first words out of his mouth was, you saw Alan's guru. So, I mean, you can't pigeonhole the Master. I've thought about it many times, and evidently was Master setting the scales even because of the gift my father gave me, but making it up at Atlantic City on a roulette wheel. So you can't pigeonhole the Master. The other thing is that when it comes to gambling, what Dick said, Kirpal has a sense of humor. So this was with Steve Mellick. Steve had this idea that he says Master has to approve of. He wanted to start an ashram, a retirement ashram for us in Ocala. But Steve, we don't have the money to buy an ashram in Ocala. So Steve said, well, Master's going to help us out with this plan. He gets, he's going to win the lottery. The Florida lottery, of course. So he you know, with the same attitude that Dick had. So he gets a lottery ticket, and he doesn't give the numbers. He just wants it computer generated. Bang, it comes out with the numbers of his date of birth. What are the odds of that? 1,000,000 to 1? He's ready to figure out how do I cash in the ticket and everything. No, his Master's doing this. So when the drawing came, not only didn't he win, but not one of the numbers on the ticket came out. I mean, which is astronomical odds at that. Oh.
Master giving a lesson.
Yeah, I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'd like to share a story. I'm not an initiate of Kirpal Singh, I'm an initiate of Eshwarpuri, but I'd like to share a story that Eshwar told about the great master, Sarwan Singh. So there came a time when Sarwan Singh was initiating people, and there was a guy, it was his time to be initiated. So he comes up to Sarwan Singh, he said, "Master, I want to be initiated. I feel this strong pull toward initiation. However, one of the requirements for initiation is that I have to give up eating meat. But there is this type of meat that I lack, and I lack it so much, and I've been eating it every day all my life. I don't see how I can give it up." And so the great master goes, "Okay, it's your time for initiation, so yeah, I will initiate you, and I will let you eat the meat as long as you don't eat it in front of me." And then this fellow was pretty happy. He said, "Okay, great. I'm getting initiated, and the great master allows me to eat meat, this particular type of meat." So he goes home, and he's very happy. He's got initiated, and he still eats this meat if he wants to. So he goes home, and he's happy, and he prepares his meal with the meat. But as soon as he was ready to put the meat into his mouth, great master appears. And then he never ate meat again.
Some of you, or probably most of you, know Bud Kirkpatrick. And a year ago, I was moving to Ocala, and he found me a place. But on my drive down from where I lived, Anna called me on the phone while I'm driving, saying that Bud fell and broke his hip, and he was in the hospital, and I should come the minute that I was there. So I got there, and I went to see him, and he wanted out of that hospital bad, but they made him wait until he could walk on his own and get up from the wheelchair by himself. So he worked real hard to do that. Well, lo and behold, 6-7 months later, he falls and breaks the other hip. And it got infected, and he was not expected to make it. In January, he passed on, but I was fortunate enough to be able to go and meditate next to him in a room full of expectant relatives and friends that were there for other reasons. But Anna was glad to see me, and Bud was happy to see me because he says, "Go, that drawer has your name on it." And so I opened the drawer, and here's 100 receipts. He wanted me to do some more book work. So I took it, and I went and did it, and I came back, and the room was still full, but I sat down next to him, and we meditated together. And a few days later, it was actually, a couple of days before he passed on, I walk in the room, and he says, "Hi, do I get to go now? Is Master going to take me today?" And I said, "I don't know, Bud. Is Master here?" And he says, "Well, Master's here with Baba Sawan." I said, "Well, then you better ask him." And he closed his eyes, and then he opened his eyes, and he says, "He said no." And I said, "Well, then you're not finished." So he says, "Well, okay." I said, "Well, I'm going to sit here and meditate with you. Just repeat the charged words." He says, "Well, I don't know if I remember them." And I said, "Well, that's okay. I do." So I put my face next to his ear, and I was saying the charged words, and you see this huge grin on his face. And he remembered the charged words. So then we meditated, and then I had to go do something, and I came back later, and he says, "Oh, good, it's you. Do I get to go now? Is he going to take me now?" And I said, "I don't know. You better ask him." So he comes out, and he says, He said, it's not time. I said, well, then you have a few breaths left. You need to meditate some more, and you need to take care of Anna. I said, because she needs you to make sure that she's going to be okay. He says, yeah, you take care of Anna. I said, no, bud. You have the means and the way to take care of Anna. It's your job to make sure that that happens. So he says, where's Roger? So Roger walks in, and here I am sitting there quietly. I don't want to be in the room. I started to leave, and he said, no, you stay. So he goes, he sat up, and he points to Roger, and he says, you make sure Anna gets everything she needs. So he said, okay, I will. And he says, now you can go. So he left the room, and I told Bud he better say goodbye to Anna, because it was not long and I felt it. He says, well, Master's here. And I said, well, you need to say goodbye to your wife, and then Master will take you when he's ready. So he said, okay. So I left him and Anna in the room, and I left. And when I left, he was with Anna, and he passed overnight or in the morning, one of those times. She was there, and she had to walk out of the room. This is what she told me. Then the family and friends wanted to view him. He was going to be cremated. And she paid extra to be able to have him laid out and everything. And I I went to the I don't know what you call it when you go to the funeral hall and they all have things to say. I did say a few words, but what happened was I happened to be able to talk to the mortician. Well, in order to make a viewing, they sewed the lips up. And he said, I had the hardest time sewing his lips up. He had this big grin. and I said, well, he was happy to go. He was ready. So that's how that happened.
Yeah, I was thinking about Barbara Grimes, and I said, oh, this is such a great little story. I never heard it myself. So she goes on to, I just wanted to share a little bit with you and say Happy New Year. And I hope I do this right. I believe I've told some of this at the gathering, so you must ask forgiveness again for repeating it myself. Well, I never heard it before, so anyway. As I recall, I made my first journey to Master Kirpal Singh in India in 1970. I've been working for some time as an assistant group leader in New York City, where dear Ben Ringel was the group leader, and for several years before I arrived on the scene, upon returning from a 2 years or so in Germany, where I had received initiation from Mrs. Fitting in Bonn. So Germany, and after working for the master for a few years, I decided that it was time I went to see him in India before I continued in his service. A letter was written, and he did give me permission, though he did say he would be on a tour for some time. So up to then, I had correspondence with him re-satsang affairs. So I felt inadequate to be working for Master, so woefully ignorant and just unworthy. And what did I know of anything? So this is Barbara Ann. This is the way she felt. So I took the trip and arrived at the ashram, and Harcharan Singh, the master's driver, picked me up at the airport and found me, in spite of Taiji's instructions, to look for a young man. Well, that was because my last name was Walters, and I also had a very short haircut in the picture they had set some years previously with, with my request for initiation. And this caused her to think that I was a young man or a boy named Walter. So Acharan Singh figured it out which passenger I was and came rushing up to me saying words to the effect that Taiji told us you were a boy.
I'm going to tell her that you was some boy you sent to pick up. And that was my introduction to India, and very, very sweet one. And we were off to Sawan Ashram. I had figured out, I thought before going, that the best idea for success on the path of the masters and the best deal to get off the wheel and to stay in the lap of God was the path of self-surrender. But what was the path of self-surrender? And so all day I would repeat mentally in my mind, I wish for the path of self-surrender. I wish for the path of self-surrender. I wish for the path of self-surrender. So several days passed, and by now, few of us present at the time were up in Rajpur and attending evening darshan with Master on his porch. And one evening when darshan was over, Master asked each one of us that time where they would like to meet the next day. When he came to me, I said, well, truly, that I didn't matter to me. Any time would be fine. So Master nodded his head and said, that is self-surrender. So when you have no wish but that of the guru, I found this information overwhelming, especially as I had never verbalized my feeble wish for that path. So several days later, again, I believe it was the evening darshan, I was still saying mentally throughout the day, I wish for the path of self-surrender. I wish for the path of self-surrender. And one evening, Master said musingly, Barber, what does a barber do? He shaves his head. Shave your head of all thoughts but those of God. Again, an overwhelming piece of information and instructions. And what did it all really mean? So back in Delhi, he did say to me in a large group of people in a big house there, after I had almost not gotten into the living room as the man in charge started to bar me, and I thought that was Master's wish, until Taiji, I think, rescued me. I was sitting in the back, which was my habit, as I recall how Master said he always sat in the back of the room when in the presence of Sawan Singh, at discourses, etc. So I did that too, hoping it would help this really inadequate and very worldly person who really did not deserve to be in front. So suddenly Master called out to me, Barbara, do you want anything? And I didn't have the courage to say, yes, I wanted the path of self-surrender. And so I missed that chance. So then Master waved his hand, and I thought he wanted me to leave, as the Indian hand wave was bye-bye to the Westerners. But in India, it meant come here. So Master said, as I got up to leave, no, come here. So I felt so shy, and oh, we're looking at you, and I was always afraid of jealousy, which was odd. But I did get myself up to Master's couch, and he patted the place next to him, and I sat down there most gingerly. And he got all sparkly and shy and tapped each shoulder, I think, two times or more, and then said, this is your prasad this evening. And then I removed myself and sat from the couch and sat on the floor. How could I remain sitting next to him, especially with all those people looking on, and myself such worldly, unworthy person, truly, she thought. And so it continued between us, I repeating, still wish for the path of self-surrender, but never daring to say it. So how could one such as me ever deserve that? And what was it exactly? And Master, honoring my wish not to put in those words and repeatedly making efforts to educate me to what it meant, so self-surrender. Well, that was many years ago, and just last year or so, it began to dawn on me, according to my simple understanding, what it entailed. It is obedience. And that is how I finally do see it. It was so simple and yet so difficult. Obedience to the Master, to do his bidding. No questions, just do it. And that is why it is so simple and so difficult. And I guess why few, as he said regularly, and also wrote, few would have the grace to take the path of self-surrender. But one can keep picking at the mind and go jolly and keep making effort to please him for all he has done for one that we know of and that we do not know of. Well, one could go on and on, but it has given to me so much peace sometimes compared to what I have had generally and still do, mental chaos, etc. One day I suddenly was aware of how far I was from God, and that I did not even know how far I was from God, and I wept copiously over the separation which I seemingly had no control. Master, every time I would walk by him, would say, "Go jolly, Barbara, go jolly." So one time, flinging out his hand at random and giving me a sweet, gentle, accidental sock on the jaw. So one day at the evening darshan, I said to him, "Master, you keep telling me to go jolly, but how can I go jolly when you have shown me how far I am from God?" He leaned over and put his hand on his chest and said, "When a man has a wound here and he puts on a nice suit of clothes, no one will know. Open one drawer at a time." So it is fine. So it's only lately that I am finally understanding how all these instructions from the master would lead to the path of self-surrender. What a big job I have to do, just to open one drawer at a time. So the day was I was to leave, and I think it was Cuckoo who came out and got me, saying master wanted to see me. I was, as usual, amazed, shy, and feeling so unworthy. I went into his room, and he motioned to me to come forward and knelt at his feet and thanked him for letting me come to see him. And he said, no, it is I who thank you for making this journey. And then I began to really sob, crying, and something I really never did do. And I could not stop. So Master kept rubbing and patting my head, saying, "God bless you, God bless you, God bless you." And I calmed down, and I took leave, and going back to the car, and Cuckoo. And she started the motor, and I think, and then suddenly said, oh, someone is coming. And there was Master at the window of the car with his hands folded, saying, "God bless you, God bless you, God bless you." And he remained there as we drove off. When I returned to New York at the satsang, I could tell the satsangis were waiting for me to tell them I had seen God. And what was it like to see God? So how could I answer that question? What did or do I know of God? I stood there in front of them, and suddenly the book in front of me opened to a page where it said, "Only a master can know another master." And that is what I told them. I could not say if Master Kirpal Singh was God. How could one such as I make such a judgment? But that this was and is the greatest power I had ever encountered. Just the other day, it seemed to me that Master said, "Barbara, I am your father, and I'm going to take care of you. I want you to leave everything to me and take care of your spiritual growth." It was on the occasion of my 79th birthday, I think, last month. So this is what I wanted to share, and maybe it does not make any sense, but maybe I should not speak of these things at all, but there it is. May Master bless us all, and may he guide our leaders and all leaders in the world through these difficult times according to his holy will and divine plan. Thank you for being my friends and dear brothers and sisters on the way with the grace of Master Kirpal Singh. Yours in the holy word, Barb.